I want to speak about one topic that has a lot of connection to many parts of the Sedra. So we will explain quite a few things in the Sedra, but along the same thread. Start with a few questions. Rashi, right away in the beginning of the Sedra, Vayetze Yaakov mi Beersheva, Vayelech Harona. We know that Yaakov was in Beersheva. If the Torah had just said, Vayelech Yaakov Harona, I would have known he left Beersheva. Why did the Torah have to tell us that he left Beersheva? It was obvious. So Chazal, Rashi says, learn from this, Sha'aziva Sadik min Hamakom Osa Roshem. When a tzaddik leaves a place, it makes an impression. That as long as the tzaddik is in the place, hu ziva, hu hoda, hu hadora, he's the light of the place. He, the Maral says, enlightens them with Torah. He is the hador. He is the beauty of the place with midos tovos. And he's the hod, the glory of the place with mitzvahs. Yotza tzaddik min ha-makom, the tzaddik leaves the place, pona ziva, pona hoda, pona hadora. So it all leaves with him, the light, the glory, the beauty. Always bothered me, Rashi is describing something that is lost when a tzaddik leaves a place. So why does he call that aziva tzaddik osa roshem? It makes an impression. He should have said it takes away an impression. It doesn't make anything. It's all negative. It should have said, Aziva Sadik min Amakom Mechaser Roshim. Lokeach Roshim. It takes away an impression. It doesn't make an impression. Second question. It says that Yaakov Avinu passed by the Makom HaMikdash and he didn't daven. Seemingly, he didn't take notice of where he was, and he passed by, he didn't daven there. When he almost got to Haran, he realized that he had passed by the Makom HaMikdash, and he didn't daven in the place where his forefathers davened, and he wanted to go back. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu either made the place come to him, or made him go back to the place in Kvitzas HaDerech. Why didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if he wanted him to daven there, tap him on the shoulder as he was passing by and say, Yaakov, this is the place where your avos daven, go daven. Why did he wait till he got to Haran and have to make a miracle of Kvitzas HaDerech? Tell him. You want him to daven there, so tell him. Don't wait till he gets there and have to make miracles. Thirdly, it says that Yaakov slept that night. Okay. That that night he slept. We learn from there that for 14 years, Yaakov Avinu did not go to sleep. That doesn't mean he didn't sleep. He didn't go to sleep. He didn't set himself up to sleep on purpose. He was learning for 14 years. Whenever he fell asleep by the Gemara, he fell asleep and he got up. He didn't lie down to go to sleep. He's running away from Esav. He's going to get to Lavan by the next day. One more night, he can't sleep. He can't stay up. He has to sleep. Why did Yaakov Avinu, he could stay up for 14 years. That night, he had to go get rocks to make a whole bed. That night, he had to go to sleep. Why? One more night. It's not the place to go to sleep in the middle of the wilderness. So he should have propped himself against a tree, caught a few minutes sleep, and go on. Why then did he lie down to go to sleep? In order to answer all of this, start with a medrash that I think we mentioned already, but in a different context. The medrash says that Rabbi Akiva was giving a drasha, and his students began to go to sleep, and Rabbi Akiva wanted to wake them up. So he said to them, what did Esther see that enabled her to rule over 127 Medinos? Let Esther, the great-great-granddaughter of Sarah, who lived 127 years, rule over 127 Medinos. So they all woke up. What is the connection between Sarah's 127 years and asked her 127 Medinos, except that it's the same number. And Rabbi Akiva went on. The Michtam Eliyahu explains this in the following way. He says that the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva were not paying attention, were going to sleep, because they felt Rabbi Akiva was talking about levels way above their head. And they felt that what's the purpose of us listening to this? This is beyond us. So we'll get a good rest. And when Rabbi Akiva comes down to our level, we'll be well rested and be able to listen. So Rabbi Akiva told them, you're making a big mistake. Do you know how Esther was able to reach the level that she reached of being able to rule over 127 Medinos? Because her entire life, she aspired to be like Sarah Imenu, who ruled over every second of her life. She was the quintessent Malka, royalty. Royalty means ruling over yourself, ruling over the situations that come your way and how you react to them. Esther aspired to be like Sarah. She never reached that level, but at least she reached the level of Esther. She was able to rule over 127 Medinos. Said Rabbi Akiva, if a person doesn't aspire to the highest levels, they'll never reach their own potential. That's why it says that every Jew has to say, Mosai Yagiu Maisei Lemaisei Avosai Avram Yitzchak V'Yaakov. Do we ever think that we're going to reach the level of Avram Yitzchak V'Yaakov? No. But if we don't aspire towards the highest levels in Ruchnius, we'll never reach our own potential. My Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Gifter Zatzal, said that there are a few Gemaras that have the same style, can ask the same question on them and give the same answer. For instance, the Gemara says, Man de boy le mehevi chasida, a person who wants to be a chassid should learn the laws of brachos, pirkei avos, and the laws of damages. If you do that, you'll be a chassid. Or the Gemara says, Harotza lahachkim yadrim. If you want to be a chacham, you should daven towards the south. Position yourself a little bit facing towards the south when you daven, because the menorah was in the south, and the menorah is a symbol of wisdom. So Shiva asked, the Gemara always speaks in the shortest, most concise manner. He could have just said, Hayadrim yachkim. If you daven to the south, you'll be a chacham. Could have just said, if you learn avos, brachos, and ezekin, you'll be a chassid. Why did it have to preface it, man de boy le mehev, a person who wants to be a chassid, do this. If you want to be a chacham, daven to the south. Just tell me, if you daven to the south, you'll be a chacham. He said, the answer is very simple. If you don't want to be a chacham, you have no aspirations, you'll never be a chacham. You could daven to the south 1,000 times a day. You'll never be a chassid. If you don't want to be a chassid, you could do every right thing. You'll never be a chassid. Everything starts with a desire, an aspiration, a goal. This is what I want. I have a goal. Then there's ways of reaching that goal. If you have no goals, you have no aspirations, you'll never accomplish anything. And not only can you reach your potential if you have the right aspiration, sometimes you can get new potential. I think we mentioned last week that Esav came in and his father told him there's no more brachas. Yaakov took everything, gave him everything. And Esav cried bitterly and Yitzchak gave him brachas. Where did he get those brachas from? Because once Esav exhibited a tremendous desire, tremendous aspiration for those brachas, it created new potential. It didn't exist before. But with a strong desire, with a strong longing, you can create new potential. The Medrash says that when the Rabbanu Shem gave the Torah, it was so overwhelming that their neshamas left them. They died and had to be resurrected. Yet another Medrash says that the Rabbanu Shem gave the Torah Kifi kol koach shel kol echad ve'echad. He gave the Torah according to the power, the strength of each person. Each person got the Torah on his level. So these two medrashim seem to contradict each other. Because if the Torah was given, kifi koach shel kol echad ve'echad, according to the strength of each person, why was it so overwhelming they had died? It was tailor-made to their abilities. So I was thinking, it doesn't say that it was given according to their strength at that moment, but it was given according to their ultimate potential. And the gulf between the ultimate potential and wherever a person is at that moment is so overwhelming that they have died. So a person always has more to achieve. There's always more to aspire to. That's why to a living person, we say, Lech Lishalom, go towards Shlemus, towards perfection. Only to a person who's died do we say, Lech Bishalom, go with the perfection that you have. You're not getting any more. But a living person is always improving, always achieving, has what to aspire to, what to dream about and long for. So that is the first preface, that in order for a person to achieve in this world, you have to aspire and have to want to improve and aspire towards greater and greater levels when it comes to ruchnius, and never be satisfied with a minimum. And if you don't aspire towards greater and greater levels, then you'll never reach anything. You'll never even reach your potential. Okay. Therefore, when Yaakov Avinu passed the Makom HaMikdash and he had no desire to daven there, stopping him and making him daven wouldn't have helped, would have achieved nothing. But once he got to Haran and he realized that he passed the place and he had tremendous desire to go back into daven, once he had that desire, the Rabbanu Shem was willing to make nisim. But you have to have a desire. You have to have want. If you don't want, you'll achieve nothing. So he waited until Yaakov Avinu wanted, and then he pushed him back. When a tzaddik is in a place, before he comes to that place, so there is no light, no beauty, no glory, comes to the place, he brings with him the light, the beauty, the glory. He leaves the place, takes it with him. What do you say? The situation went back to the way it was in the beginning. It's not true. What's different? Before the tzaddik came to the place, there was no light, no glory, no beauty, but nobody missed it. That was status quo. Once the tzaddik came to the place, they had a taste of what that light and beauty and glory was. Now the tzaddik leaves the place. Now they feel that something's missing, and they have a desire to get it back. That's osaroshim. It makes an impression. What's the making of the impression? Not what leaves, but it leaves a vacuum that people now have a desire to get it back, and therefore, what's it called? It's something positive. Before the tzaddik was in the city, they had no desire for it. When the tzaddik came and left, he left them at least with a desire to regain it. That's something positive. That's osaroshim. And that teaches us that even if a person has goals and sometimes reaches them but then falls back, happens to all of us. You reach goals that you want to reach and then you go back to where you were. You should never think that you're back where you started, because getting a taste of that higher level and appreciating it gives you a desire to try to get back there, which you didn't have before you ever tasted that higher level. Even though it's the beginning of the year, and usually I save this idea to the end of the year, but inevitably what you're going to accomplish this year is going to put you on a much higher level than you were last year. Inevitably. And inevitably when you go back, you're going to fall down from that level a little bit. It's impossible not to. You're not in the same environment with the same intensity, and you're going to feel terrible, right? That you, as if you didn't accomplish anything. But you did. You had a taste of that higher level, and it gives you an incentive to want to reach it again and to have at least an aspiration to try to reach it again. So that's called osaroshim. It makes an impression. Why did Yaakov Avinu sleep that night? Chazal say that right before a person dies, before his neshama leaves his body, it gives a scream that's heard from one end of the world to the other. Misofa olam beat sofa. From the end of the world to the end of the world. Reb Chaim Volozhiner explains what's the neshama screaming about. Right before a person dies, HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows him a split screen, two images. On one side of the screen, he shows him what he could have been had he developed all his potential. On the other side of the screen, he shows him what he actually was. And when the person sees the difference between these two screens, which usually is the case, the neshama gives a scream that goes, Misofa olam biat sofa. It's so painful. So so shocking. Want to add to that. The language seems a little difficult. Misofa olam biat sofa. Should have said Merosha olam biat sofa. From the beginning of the world to the end. Why say from the end to the end? I was thinking of explaining it in the following way. In the Gemara in Megillah, there's an argument what it means in Megillah's Esther when it says that Achashverosh was Hamolech Mehodu Biad Kush. One opinion, Rav and Shmuel argue. One of them says that Hodu and Kush were at opposite ends of the world. And he ruled from Hodu to Kush and everything in between. The other one says, no, Hodu and Kush were right next to each other. And just like he ruled over Hodu and Kush, which were right under his thumb, he ruled over the whole world. The Vilna Gaon asks two questions. Firstly, how can you have an argument, right, of where Hodu and Kush are? Right, go take a map. Get in a boat, travel to them, and find out if they're opposite ends of the world or right next to each other. How do you sit in the base medrash and argue if Los Angeles and New York are right next to each other or at opposite ends of the country? Go find out. Sit in the base medrash and argue over a metzias? And secondly, we know that when it comes to the machlokas of Chazal, Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim b'chayim. How could both be right? How could Hodu and Kush be right next to each other and opposite ends of the world? One is right, one's wrong. Says the Vilna Gaon, no, no problem at all. Since the world is a globe, any two points on a globe are at the same time right next to each other and at opposite ends of the world. This building and the staircase opposite it are right next to each other, if you go that way. But if you go that way, when will you hit that staircase? After you go around the whole world. So that staircase and this building are right next to each other, if you look this way. And they're at opposite ends of the world if you look that way. Both are true. The question is only perspective. Does the Megillah want to tell us the quantity of Achashverosh's rule? Look that way and you'll see he rules over the whole world from one end to the other. Or the quality. Everything was under his thumb and he ruled over the whole world just like he ruled over those two points that were right next to each other. Machlokas is in perspective, not in metzias. It's not the fact, what actually existed. How do you look at it? Okay. Based on that, any point in space, any point on the globe, is at the same time a little point, a little nothing. But if you divide it into two and make the top the beginning, and the bottom, the end, and you go away from the point, that little point contains the whole world. Because the top of the point is the beginning point. You go away from the point. You come back to the end of the point after you've gone around the whole world. So a point, if you look at it as a beginning and an end, it's the whole world. And if you look at it just as a point, it's a nothing. That's potential. Every one of us has points of potential. If we look at them as a beginning and develop them to the end, every point is a world to itself. But if you look at it as an end in itself, and you don't look at it as something to develop, but just as what it is, it's nothing. That's what it says. The neshama gives a scream that's heard from the end of the world to the end of the world, because it looked at these points of potential as ends, not as beginning and ends. If it had looked at the potential as a beginning and an end, it would have developed the whole world around that potential. But because it looked at it, misofa olam v'atsofo, as an end in itself, it remained just points of potential which are insignificant. And therefore, before a person dies, the Rabban Shem shows him what his potential was, what he actually achieved, and the neshama reacts accordingly. The Gemara says that sleep is 1/60th of death. Now, that does not mean that if you have 60 people in a room, a Kohen can't come in. It also doesn't mean that if you sleep 60 times, you're gone. What does it mean that sleep is 1/60th of death? The concept of shishim is that something maintains its identity up to 60 times. Kashrus. If something, a little bit of meat, falls into milk, and there's 60 times as much milk as meat, it's batel, loses its identity. But up till 60 times, it still maintains its identity, and it's awesome. But something that's less than 1/60th loses its identity. Therefore, if something is 1/60th of something else, it means it still has the identity of that second thing. Sleep is obviously not death, but it has the smallest amount of identity of death in it. How so? When a person dies, his neshama leaves his body completely, almost completely, for our purposes, completely. When a person sleeps, his neshama and his body separate, similar to death. And because of that, and that's why in the morning, when you get up, you have to wash, because it's if you were dead for a while. Where is the death? The death is that you're inactive. You can't be dynamic and active. Where is activity? Your hands. So the ruach ra is if your hands died, you have to wash them in the morning and revive them. So sleep is similar in that respect to death. If that's the case, just like when a person dies, HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows him what his ultimate potential was and what he actually achieved. By sleep also, people dream. They also have a feeling of where they're going, what their aspirations are, what their goals are. Dreams also sometimes reflect a stomach ache. Sometimes they reflect the aspirations and longings that a person has. And therefore, Yaakov Avinu wanted to know if he's going to survive in the house of Laban. What did it depend on? What his dreams and aspirations were. What's his goals? Does he have dreams and aspirations? So he had to sleep that night to be able to see where he's holding. And that's the dream that he saw. A ladder with its head in the heavens. He was dreaming of the most lofty things. And therefore he knew that he was going to be able to survive in Lavan's house. That was the idea. He wanted Bedavka to sleep, to be able to test and see what his dreams are, what he's dreaming about, what his goals and aspirations are. In fact, Balabas, all of our Shalom is no longer in this world, my head in Miami years ago, once told me a beautiful word. I'm saying his name. His name was Saul Kalchman. He said that when Yaakov went to Laban's house, he was dreaming of angels climbing ladders. You know when he decided it's time to leave Laban's house? When he was dreaming about animals, if they were spotted, or he said, when I came here, I was dreaming about angels. Now I'm dreaming about animals. Time to go. So that's what Yaakov tried to test himself by going to sleep that night to see what his dreams were. Because if he doesn't have dreams and aspirations and goals, he's never going to survive in Laban's house. Now, all of that is very nice. And it's important to have goals and aspirations and dreams of where you'd like to go, ruchnius-wise. But there are certain qualifications that without these qualifications, all of that could be worthless or even negative. Let me tell you the qualifications. I'll take the questions after. I'll tell you a story. It's not a medrash, it's just a story. You'll see that that story echoes a medrash in this week's Sedra. The story goes of a person who wanted very much to be a multimillionaire. That was his goal. That was his dream. And he realized that there is no way, naturally, that if he worked for the next 500 years and saved every penny, he wouldn't be a multimillionaire. There's only one way, b'derech hateva, that he could be a multimillionaire is if he won the lottery. So every day, at the end of his Shemoneh Esrei, three times a day, he begged the Ribbono Shel Olam, please Ribbono Shel Olam, let me win the lottery. Let me become a multimillionaire. I promise you, half the money right off the bat, I'll give to tzedakah. The other half, I will use only for Torah and mitzvahs and to make my lifestyle one that really benefits you and Klal Yisrael. And every single day, three times a day, for 5-10 minutes at the end of Shemoneh Esrei, he begged, cried, please God, let me win the lottery. After 20 years of this, the angels came to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and they said, Ribbono Shel Olam, we can't take this anymore. Every day we got to listen to this guy plead and beg and cry, let me win the lottery. You know, he sounds sincere. What would be so terrible, Ribbono Shel Olam, if this guy won the lottery? So Ribbono Shel Olam said to them, I'd love him to win the lottery, except he never bought a ticket. You can have dreams and aspirations and goals, but if you never buy the ticket, you're not going to realize your goals and aspirations and dreams. They're going to remain dreams. And that is the following Medrash. Medrash says the following. Chalomoseim shel tzadikim hein bashamayim v'hein ba'aretz. The dreams of tzadikim are both in the heaven and on the earth. Yaakov Avinu dreamt in this week's Sedra, Sula Mutzav Arza V'Rosho Magia Shomaima, a ladder on the ground with its head in the heavens. The dream encompasses heaven and earth. The bottom of the ladder is on the ground, top of the ladder is in the heavens. So the dreams of tzaddikim are both in heaven and earth. The dreams of Rishoyim are neither in heaven or earth. Who dreamt? Paro. What did he dream? He was standing on the water. Not the heavens, not the earth, the water. What's the meaning of the Medrash? Tzadikim have tremendous dreams up in the heavens. Their aspirations, their goals are in the heavens. But their dreams are firmly planted on the ground with a ladder, how to reach those goals. You can't stand at the bottom of the ladder and say, oh, I wish I was at the top of the ladder. It's not going to happen. You have to climb the ladder. Today, one rung, tomorrow, another rung. And little by little, you'll achieve your goals. Somebody says, I want to know the whole Tanakh. That's my goal. Did you ever open a sefer? No, but I really want to know the whole Tanakh. It's not going to happen, just by wishing. Today, learn one perek. Tomorrow, another perek. And eventually, you'll know the whole Tanakh. I want to be the greatest balas midos that ever existed. Fine. Did you ever work on any midos? No, but I really want to be the biggest balas midos. You have to put your dreams firmly planted on the ground and climb rung after rung. You have to have short-range goals and a program. You can't just have dreams that are in the heavens. They have to be planted on the ground with a ladder. How are you going to achieve them? Rishayim, on the other hand, don't have lofty dreams. They have no program. Everything's wishy-washy on the water. So they have neither lofty dreams or any kind of program to reach any kind of decent level. So that is, excuse me, that's one condition. Second condition, even though a person has to aspire constantly to higher and higher levels, you can never be satisfied with ruchnius, where you are. You have to always want more. With gashmius, you can be sameach b'chelko. You can be happy and satisfied with a minimum. Most of the world is the opposite. With ruchnius, they're satisfied with the minimum, and with gashmius, never. But the proper way is, with gashmius, you could be satisfied with a minimum for you, whatever that minimum may be. It's different for different people. And with ruchnius, you never should be satisfied. However, at the same time that you're not satisfied with a minimum, you have to be happy with what you have. The Vilna Gaon explains the pasuk in Mishlei, Leiv chacham liyamino, the leiv ksiel lismolo. The heart of the chacham is to his right, and the heart of the fool is to his left. The Vilna Gaon explains it in the following way. If you're learning a sefer, what you've learned already is to the right. Right? You learn the sefer, what you're yet to learn is to your left. A foolish person only looks at what he hasn't accomplished, looks to the left. There's so much, he gives up. The wise person also wants to accomplish, but every once in a while he looks to the right to see what he's accomplished already, and it gives him the incentive to want to go on. You have to be happy with what you have, but not satisfied with it. Someach b'chelko, but not mistapik b'muad. Two separate things. Because if you are not happy with what you've accomplished, you're going to only be frustrated, because all you're going to see is what you haven't accomplished, how much more there is to do. But if you balance the two, you're happy with what you've accomplished. I would like to know a lot more. I'd like to be a bigger tzaddikus. But I'm happy that I've accomplished something. I'm a bigger tzaddikus than I was a year ago. So I'm on the way. I'm not where I'd like to be, but I'm a lot better than I used to be. If you don't recognize and appreciate where you're holding compared to where you were, then you're just going to get frustrated. But if you're satisfied with where you're holding, then you'll never grow. So you need both things. You need to be happy with where you're holding and not satisfied with it. And that brings us to another part of the Sedra. Rachel Imenu wants so much to have a child that she says that if I don't have a child, it's like death. I'd rather die. And finally, the Rabban Shem gives her a child. Okay? What does she name that child? Yosef. For two reasons. Firstly, Asaf Hashem Escher Pasi. God took away my shame. Secondly, Yosef Li Hashem Ben Acher. Give me another one. I'd like another child. Both of those reasons on the surface are extremely difficult to understand. Imagine if you wanted a new dress. Maybe you probably don't have to imagine it. Okay. Right, this dress that you wanted, and you ask your parents, and they say no. So you don't give up, and you ask them again, and again, and again. Wake them up 3 o'clock in the morning. You sure I can't have the dress? I want the dress so much. finally, you wear them down, and they give in, and they buy you the dress. And your reaction is, can I have another one? Does that sound nice? That sounds very chazerish. Say thank you. Tomorrow ask for another one, not now. Say thank you. Don't say, I'll take another one. That's what Rachel did. Rachel Imenu says, right, I want a child, I want a child. Finally, the woman gives her a child. What'd she say? Oh, can I have another one? Give me another one. What kind of ridiculous thing is that? Be happy with what you have. You want to ask for another one? Ask tomorrow, not today. So why'd she say, Yosef li Hashem ben acher? Without Midrashim. Midrashim knew, she knew she has two, she's going to get whatever. Simple shot in the pasuk. Okay, Michlala, it's okay to learn Pshuto Shel Mikra, it's Rabbi Cooperman's, he's mitztayen in that. So we can also forget about the Midrashim for now. Pashup shot in the pasuk, what? Secondly, the other reason also doesn't make any sense. What does Rashi say? Osaf Hashem Escher Pasi. He says two pshatim. One I understand, and one is beyond my comprehension. One I understand is, Rachel said, until now people said I was not really a tzaddikus because I wasn't part of building Klal Yisrael. And now God took away my shame and showed that I'm fit to be a mother in Klal Yisrael too, to build Klal Yisrael. I understand that, 100%. What's the second pshat in Rashi? Rachel said, until now, if I broke a plate in the kitchen or somebody stole a cookie from the cookie jar, who would they blame? Me. But now I have a kid to blame. So God took away my shame. From now on, I could blame my kid for breaking plates and stealing cookies. That is Rachel Imenu. All these years, she wanted a child. You know why? I can't stand being blamed for breaking plates. So I need a child so I can blame somebody. First of all, that sounds ridiculous. Secondly, that's a mother. Usually Jewish mothers take the blame for what their children do. They don't blame their kids for what they did. Now she's saying, now if I steal a cookie or I break a plate, I can blame the kid. Thirdly, it's not going to work really till the kid's at least two, three. Nobody's going to believe that an eight-day-old kid climbed out of his crib, broke a plate, stole the cookie. It's not going to happen for another 2 years. So that's what she said. That way, she just gave birth to the kid. Wow, I can see 2 years from now, I'm going to steal a cookie and blame the kid. Sounds absurd. Therefore, what I think is the following. Rachel Imenu wanted a child for the highest spiritual reason. Not stam, to have a child just like any mother would want their own personal child. She wanted to build Klal Yisrael. I'll prove it to you. Next week's Sedra. Next week's Sedra, Rachel Imenu is having her second child, and she is hemorrhaging probably, going into shock. And the midwife sees that her life is hanging in the balance. The worst thing is that she should go into shock. That's it. So what do you do to a person who's losing blood and you don't want them to go into shock? You calm them down. Make sure that they remain calm. Okay. So if you have this woman who realizes that something's gone wrong with this birth and her life is in danger, how would you calm her down? What would you tell her? Don't worry. You're going to survive. You're going to dance at this child's wedding. Everything's going to be okay. Is that normally what you would say? I think so. What did the midwife say to her? Al tiri. Don't worry. It's a boy. Now, what in the world did Rachel at that moment care if it was a boy, a girl, or a giraffe? The woman's dying. That's the way to calm her down? Oh, it's a boy. Right. Right now, tell her you're going to survive. Boy, girl, we'll get to that later. Right now, right, her life is hanging. Now, that's the idea. Rachel Imenu wanted a child so she would bring another Shevet into Klal Yisrael. If she did, it was worth dying for. If she didn't, just another kid, then it wasn't worth living for. So her reason to have a child wasn't stam to have a child. Have a child doesn't make a difference, boy or girl. But to be the mother of another Shevet in Klal Yisrael has to be a boy. So the midwife knew, telling her you're going to survive is not going to help. Telling her that you brought another shaven into the world, that'll calm her down. So Rachel Imenu wanted a child for the highest spiritual reasons, greatest aspirations. On the other hand, and that's why when it comes to Ruchnius, you never can be satisfied. I want another one. Nothing wrong with doing that, with saying that. I want another one because I'm not satisfied ever with the level of Ruchnius I'm on. I want to bring another shaven into the world. Perfectly okay. On the other hand, if you're not happy with the smallest benefit, then you're always going to be frustrated. Therefore, Rachel Imenu said the following: I want this child for the highest spiritual reason, but I'm happy even with the smallest benefit. What's the smallest benefit? What I understand is not that Rachel would blame the kid for breaking the plate, but until now, if she broke a plate in the kitchen or she stole a cookie, people would say, what's going on over here? Can't you concentrate? Can't you focus on what you're doing? Breaking plates, stealing cookies. But now she had someone to blame. Not that the kid took the cookie or the kid broke the plate. She broke it and she took the cookie. But you know why? She has this great appetite because she has to nurse her child, and the child, you know, constantly is sapping her strength. She couldn't control herself. She had to take the cookie. She can't focus on what she's doing because the kid was up all night and she had her mind's on the baby. So she broke a plate. Can't have that many complaints against her that she can't focus on what she's doing. She has something else on her mind, which is important, her child. That's what it means. Now the blame will be taken away from her. Not that she'll blame the child, but now people will say the reason these things happen, because her mind is not on what she's doing, her mind is on her child. That's the idea. That's the smallest benefit that Rachel Imenu could have gotten from having a child. But if she wasn't happy with that, she wouldn't be happy with anything. Because if you're always looking for more to be happy with, there's never enough. So I'm happy with the smallest benefit, but I'm not satisfied. I want the greatest spiritual result. Same time that you're happy with what you have, you're not satisfied with it. That's how a person has to deal when it comes to ruchniyistic things. You always have goals and aspirations. You always want more. But you don't lose sight of what you have to be happy with it until you get the more. That's the idea. So all of these things are inherent in the parsha. There's a lot more, but for now we'll satisfy ourselves with this and find other places and other parshiyos to speak a little bit more about this idea of growth and wanting to grow or whatever. We'll find other parshiyos to finish it off. Okay.